Our first speaker possibly doesn't need any introduction. It's Ruth Dudley Edwards, whom many of you will know. She has a varied career as an Irish historian, crime novelist, journalist, broadcaster, is currently a columnist with the Sunday Independent, and has been described as a lively and sometimes controversial commentator. So we look forward to Ruth's contribution on changing the conversation on history. Ruth.
Thank you, Dan. Good evening, everyone. The notes for speakers said, apropos this session, we seem to think that the only history to reflect about here is orange and green. And I didn't actually read that until I had scribbled some notes on what I was going to say. And my notes began orange and green. And I thought, oh dear, I am living up to the stereotype. But I don't think one can actually avoid it. Now, for those of you who don't know anything about me, I should mention that I was brought up in Dublin, Catholic. I will say it was a slightly sceptical background. It wasn't knee-jerk tribal, but it was a Catholic background. I went to a convent. I didn't like Rome rule. Well, I particularly didn't like the Irish variety of Rome rule, which is what we had in Ireland, and I got the hell out when I was 21 and never went back. Although I'm still carrying an Irish passport and I'm very fond of Ireland, and I became interested in Northern Ireland for all the obviously depressing reasons in the 70s and 80s, and began to go to political conferences and that kind of thing. And initially, the only politicians I knew were nationalist politicians. And it wasn't easy to get to know unionists, I have to say, because they were all seemed to be completely paranoid when presented with somebody who came from Dublin, from my tribe, even if I was really not tribal. But gradually I got to know some of them. And gradually I discovered a truth. Well, I think it's a truth. It doesn't go down well with my original tribe, which is that nationalists are quite often less nice than they seem, because they're very good at seeming nice. And the old prods are quite often nicer than they seem because they're really good at seeming awful. And that led me to get interested in orange men and parades and all sorts of things and write a book about orange men, which is why I'm now known to my own tribe by various things like traitor, turncoat, orange lil. And really, all I'm trying to do when I write is to explain unionists to others and to themselves quite often, because they seem to be pretty damn awful at explaining themselves. But I'm talking about orange and green, not in the narrow sense really, but in the sense that the worst problems we have with narrative, I think, in these islands are not orange versus green. It's, if you like, dark orange versus orange and dark green versus green. Because to take my tribal narrative, you know, what happened in 1916 was that the constitutional nationalists were driven out by the violent nationalists. What happened with orange tradition here was that the bigots drove out the moderates, if you like. So we now have the cheery position in Northern Ireland, and I'm sorry for those of you here who are members of the DUP, or Sinn Féin, but that essentially the people who have won are the bigots and the murderers. And the prods vote for bigots, and the Catholics vote for murderers. And I think they should both be ashamed of it. Narrative. Narrative is the in word now. We don't talk about history or our stories. We talk about narrative. It's getting very interesting in the South because the centenary of 1916 is coming up. As you mathematicians will know, in a couple of years. And there's a big undercurrent of row about who are the inheritors of 1916. When I was growing up in Ireland, you could not question 1916 because the people of violence had won the argument. The home rulers had lost the argument. They never spoke. You didn't admit to having been a home ruler. I mean, the statistics for that period are utterly astonishing. There were 50,000 Irish men died in the First World War. 2,000 died in the so-called War of Independence. About 400 died in 1916. But we never heard about the 50,000 dead people from the First World War. We never heard anything about home rulers. We never heard anything, really, about constitutional nationalists. My mother became a school teacher in a rather nationalistic school, and she came home and she said, if you ask those children about the Vikings and the dates of Brian Boru, they say it all happened in 1916. That was the only date imprinted on their consciousness. And you didn't question it. You couldn't question it because you were a pariah if you did. Now, what's happening in the South, and do follow this if you're interested in history, because it's really shaping up to be really interesting. There are a few people, and I'm one of them, who think that 1916 Rising was wrong, quite straightforwardly, wrong, immoral, and unjustified for a cabal of a tiny number of people to decide to launch a revolution with no democratic mandate in a democracy is wrong, I think. But there are a few people who say that now. They're brave enough to say it now, but it certainly wasn't anything that people said when I was growing up. But apart from the tiny number of people who say that, the official establishment position is 1916, good. Everybody agrees on that, apart from the few dissenters, as it were. War of Independence, good. There's another big question mark in my book. But then Fine Gael, which is the old Law and Order Party, says all violence after the War of Independence, wrong. Civil War, wrong. Fianna Fáil, who fought a democratic decision to go with the treaty, say civil war, fine. Violence, okay, up to the end of the civil war. After that, all violence, wrong. Because then they were in government some years afterwards and they started hanging people who were still engaged in violence. The Provisional IRA, or should I call them Sinn Féin now, are fighting very hard to have it accepted that all violence up to and including up to 1998, good, perfectly justified, absolutely in line with what happened in 1916, just as justified. The dissidents say all violence fine to now and the future because we haven't got our freedom. Now, in my view, if you accept 1916, the dissidents are right. They are the true heirs of 1916. They are the true heirs of a small cabal that thinks it has the right to decide what happens to its country. So there's going to be really big wars going on in the South over this. Sinn Féin are doing very nicely. They have got already done a deal which makes the mayor of Dublin in 1916 Sinn Féin. And they are hoping to be in government in the South then. And if they're in government here still, well, it's going to be interesting. Sinn Féin are very good. Republicans are very good at narrative. In fact, I would say nationalists are very good at narrative. My tribe is a hell of a lot better than the Unionist tribe in actually constructing an arresting narrative. There's a very interesting book from several years ago called We Wrecked the Place, which was based on interviews with prisoners who had committed essentially sectarian killings in the early 70s. And they all went to jail knowing that they had shot a neighbour who happened to be of the other religion. Well, the Catholics went to prison and discovered they weren't sectarian murderers at all. They were actually freedom fighters. And they were given a narrative. Why they were freedom fighters. They hadn't shot a prod because he was a prod. They'd shot a prod because he'd oppressed them for generations and he was probably in the armed, in the security forces or relative of one of them or in some way an oppressor. And then they were taught their narrative, then they were taught their justification and they came out as freedom fighters. The prods went in and they split between the ones who took up the Bible and the ones who took up weightlifting and the ones who took up drugs, and the ones who didn't know what the hell they were up to. They never got a narrative. And the Republican narrative went on, and it got more refined, and the victim narrative, the most oppressed people ever narrative, the whole narrative that enabled them to present hate as patriotism, the contempt for the prods. Where the Provisionals got it wrong was they really did think they could bomb the prods into United Ireland, because they underestimated them. You will find there's still a contempt. I mean, they still believe that they're smarter and they're certainly better at rhetoric. but they have an absolute contempt for loyalists. There was a very interesting talk earlier today about contempt and demonisation of working class loyalists. When Sinn Féin talks about collusion, they really genuinely believe that no Protestant terrorist was capable, no paramilitary was capable of murdering anybody without the assistance of the British, because they were all too stupid. It's another form of contempt. The orange narrative, insofar as there is one, is immensely defensive. It isn't attractive. I believe the Republican one is profoundly dishonest, but it's very impressive. You know, I mean, Gerry Adams will still say in America that Catholics didn't have the vote in Northern Ireland. He still says that. I mean, they are magnificent at lies. They tell them beautifully. And I only wish there was a little bit more equality, as it were, in rhetoric. I came to the conclusion that it was my job to challenge the ancestral voices of my own tribe. And I wish there was more of that on both sides. I wish Protestant voices were more challenging of their own myths, because there's lots wrong with Protestant history as well. Both tribes have terrible things in their background and good things in their backgrounds and things to be proud of. But Orangeism shouldn't just be proud of being defiant and refusing ever to compromise on anything and being unimaginative. It should sometimes be proud of, you know, or more proud of courage, industry, decency. There's a lot for Catholics to be proud of. It shouldn't be violence. But that actually is part of the narrative. It's the violence we're supposed to be proud of. Anyway, I have made big efforts to try to see history through the point of view of the tribe I wasn't brought up in. It's not easy, and I just give you an example before I go off and leave my colleagues to take over. When I was writing a book on the Orange Order, and I'd spent an enormous amount of time with them, and I'd got to know them very well, and I had very good friends among the Orange Order. Enemies, too, I hasten to add. Some of them were dreadful, but some of them were wonderful. And I was on the phone to a friend of mine, Brian Kennaway, Presbyterian minister, who was the reforming wing of Orangeism. And we were doing our usual thing of tearing our hair out in the hope of finding some kind of solution to the latest impasse in Drumcree. And the particular idiot, poor, decent, complete idiot who was refusing to see any way of compromising, because he thought compromise was an immoral word. And I said to Brian, you know, Brian, of course, when this thing happened, or Harold said this, that's when Ockram was lost. And there was a sort of a silence, and Brian said, but we won Ockram. And I said to him, I'm terribly sorry, because Ockram was one of the Williamite wars. It was the one that my tribe lost, and it's a phrase in Irish, in Ireland, you know, Ockram was lost, meaning silly mistake, bad tactic. We lost this important battle, thus the Williamite wars. And I just said it completely unthinkingly, and Brian is saying, but we won Ockram. And I thought, my God, after all these years of trying to look at history from the point of view of the other tribe, I'm still making as elementary a mistake as this, because my thought processes still, in some ways, in my own language, are tribal. So changing the narrative ain't easy with history. But I do think it's our job to challenge particularly our own side, intelligently and with a bit of guts and conviction. Thank you.